In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. Also, read the newsletter over on socialsuplex.com. Huge shout out to Trish and Tim, as always, and everybody who has contributed so far. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of North Carolina and a whole lot of mediocrity. Me doing that is my proof that there's just nothing this week, but we're going to get through it, guys. We're going to get through it together. Got a whole load of nothing. I mean, to be fair, the very first match I'm going to talk about, actually, I generally had a great time with. So there's that, then there's everything else this week. Because normally there's like one thing I enjoyed on Raw, maybe one thing I enjoyed on SmackDown, and the rest of the shows are da-da-da. This week, oh, you've got your one. You've got your thing we're starting with, and it's all downhill from there. So starting off with positivity. So let's jump on over to North Carolina for the WWE Women's Championship, Tiffany Stratton versus Nia Jax. Yes, the thing I enjoyed this week involved Nia Jax. Deal with it. So let's jump on over to Greensboro in North Carolina.
Oh, she's grabbing the chair that Naomi brought out. She's got the... drop kicks the chair right into her face. Tiffany Stratton just put the steel chair right through her face with that kick. Prettiest moonsault ever to retain in a classic!
Apparently viewed internally as an instant classic, featuring a stiff-as-hell chair dropkick to the head of a then-bloody Nia, and easily the best match between these two. But was it really that good? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It was not an instant classic. But it was good, and I did have a good time with it. I'm out here genuinely enjoying a Nia Jax title match, unironically. Like, sure, she hit the running senton as if she was slipping over, but it doesn't really matter. Like, I had a fun time. I had fun with this. I mean, to be fair, it did the one thing I'm a sucker for. Those two foes have been battling each other loads, and you start to see counters for their matches. As like, yes. It's my favourite thing of the Okada reign, because he'd been defending for so much. There were just so many ways opponents had started to learn how to counter his offense, and then he then started to come up with new ways to have a swing into the Rainmaker, or to how to then counter their counters. So suddenly it became this new dance, and he saw Okada adapt and evolve over the course of his title reign. Really, it's what made the reign as special as it was, as you were watching those matches in those final stages every time. WWE don't really do that. They've got their spots and their moments. They don't really have characters learning from the wrestling part. It's more to do with their overcoming things in story. That's more of a storyline for AEW, where it's like focused on the wrestling. The prize is in focus for WWE, but the actual stories within the wrestling match itself, not quite as much. I like just seeing that flow here. We'd be so able to counter each other. Like Stratton's cartwheel into an Alabama, instead halted and powerbombed. Just something nice and simple like that. We even got a Brett's rope, I don't know what to call it, I call it like the inside out rotation that Trevor Lee kind of used to do in like the running version, which caught me completely off guard that they managed to pull that off like seemingly perfectly fine. The final five was kicked into by an attempted interference. Naomi on out with a chair, but Cargill chased her off. Stratton nailed the prettiest moonsault ever, then commentary were going ballistic, sending it so hard that no one has ever kicked out of the move before. Proof of it making sense that WWE internally thought this was a classic, because we then got like the announce table spot, then another finisher escape after an oof looking annihilator, followed by a fake walkout into that finishing chair spot, which I'll get to in a second. It's just, you can understand why internally they thought this match was so good. All of the notes of what they believe makes a great match are here. It's exactly what I was talking about with John Cena and Randy Orton, which reminded me so much of that greatest wrestling match ever between Edge and Randy Orton, which is all the notes that they believe makes a great match. And again, they're kind of showing up here. There's certain things, there's crowd reactions and stuff. For men, them, that's what makes a great match. I'm here with my nerdy reaction, still on my high after Ospreay versus Danielson, and I've still not come down from it. Just that next level that you're able to take me to. Well, this is more, you know, your classic run-of-the-mill stuff, which they believe works. And Tiffany Stratton and Nia Jax did a great job with those tools. I genuinely really enjoyed this match. But as I said, almost like the talking point coming out of this match as well. Nia grabbed the chair that Naomi had ran down with earlier, but Tiffy nailed a running dropkick as soon as the lass was back into the ring, sending the chair right into Jax's forehead, and the blood was immediately started running. Nia Jax posted a black and white picture online as well on socials, so you can see the aftermath of the damage of this, like a genuine immediate cut. They didn't really try and show it on commentary because they're focusing, they kind of just continued to focus on Tiffany Stratton because the momentum from the dropkick was meant to stay with Tiffany, so they just didn't alter any of the production and just kept it how they were going to do it the entire time anyway. It didn't really feel like after the bell they weren't showing Nia because, oh, maybe it's a too deep of a cut for them to show on TV. It felt more like production-wise we're going to focus on Tiffy anyway, so this didn't change anything. It just felt like that. The camera angles they were doing felt more like that. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what it felt like. So yeah, a good match, but you can see why WWE thought it was a classic. They even had Tessitore say it so after the bell. They'd be like, oh, that was an instant classic. It's like, yeah, it was good. You selling it as hard as that then makes me think of matches I actually think are an instant classic rather than me just being able to enjoy it in its own little thing. Just don't invite the comparisons because it's not. It's just flat out not. But I did enjoy it. It was a fun time. It's all downhill from here in terms of my actual enjoyment of this week. I would say SmackDown was passable enough. It's not like a lot major happening, but it was passably fine. I'm not a fan of this show being 2 hours. So it's 2 hours for me. What I mean is I'm not a huge fan of this being 3 hours. It's 2 hours pretty much for me on Netflix. I understand you Americans have got the Hulu. But yeah, the 3 hour live show for me, the SmackDown doesn't need to be that long. I understand it's good for the talent to just to have that extra room so you can get more people onto the cards, but as a viewer, it's too much. I'm getting too much of the WWE product each week. If anything, I'm thankful that Raws have been getting shorter. This week's is, for me, I watched a 1 hour 40 show. I don't know about you suckers who saw a 3 hour show. I like the edited version, just was almost half the length of what was broadcast. Like, Jesus. But yes, SmackDown was passably fine, but I genuinely enjoyed the main event. That's kind of what suddenly makes it much more enjoyable. It's literally just because of this main event. This is the match I'm going to recommend. You go and watch with those asterisks and caveats that this is a match that WWE would believe would be a classic. If you are somebody who your instant classics are those like huge incredible epics from AEW, don't touch this. don't touch this. It's not for you. But I had a good time. Let's jump on to the rest of the show, starting off with Jeff Cobb no more. When you feel alone and insecure, it's time to make some changes and go by JC Mateo. Like, what the hell is that name? It's like a name I'd come up with in a video game where I go, fuck it, and I just put my own name in there. It's like, oh, I don't know, JC Mateo? That's just like, what's going on? Because why would you want to use the recognisable and Googleable name of a known Olympian? Why would you want that? Now, you obviously want to change the name to JC Mateo. Sikoa's music opened the show for him to walk on out, Jacob Fatu and New Man JF. Fatu is not familiar with the man Solo referred to as My Man JC. It's fine, you can call him JC. I might even forgive it. It's the Mateo bit which felt a bit shit. And yes, maybe I feel like it's particularly shit because it's what I definitely did as a teenager when I couldn't come up with names on my video games. Like, I have a Dynasty Warriors character called Matos. Like, I was not good coming up with names. With Big Jeff by his side, Solo finally felt comfortable enough to try his old manipulating tricks. The dynamic different, but it's still not working. LA Knight jump and we got ourselves a Wii debut match set up. Impromptu booked after the Money in the Bank qualifier and post-match jump, which you'll get to later. LA Knight versus JC Mateo. Meaning we got our Cobb debut with the lad unceremoniously dressed in black trousers and t-shirt combination. Also odd to see Knight in a match with the crowd a bit quiet, but it makes sense with Jeff being new and it immediately taking place after a triple threat they were just allowed for. Which makes it kind of crazy that Knight took a belly-to-belly to the outside for this. Like, I understand trying to make the new guy look good. But where this is on the card in terms of the crowd investment doesn't really make sense to do that here. You can do that bump later. That's a, a pretty big bump for this. Really not a whole lot of note here. Kind of slow and kick punchy, but it's all building up to giving the WWE audience their first showing of the tour of the islands. So you know what? fine. The stunning moonsault really caught them off guard too. Like, honestly, the thing that surprised me with this the most is that it went for over 10 minutes. Like, I understand you got time to fill on a card, but this was, why is this long? You basically got your little notes showing Jeff Cobb doing his punchy punchy, got LA Knight doing his fight back with his punchy punchy, and then you got the Tour of the Islands counter finish. But you did that over 10 minutes. I gave you kind of like the big spots that you kind of, in terms of momentum, what you're going for with this match. But it was 10 minutes, which is kind of just like, I understand why the crowd were just maybe a little bit quiet. I also understand like a little crowd resetty type of thing in a way that it's kind of acted for before the main event. And it did work because they had the energy for the main event, but this was just like, like, if I wasn't watching this, I would have fast forwarded it. If I'm not making notes, I'm just like, why is this like this? Why is it like this? If you got fatigued watching this show, this is where it happened. This was it. If you finished SmackDown, be like, oh yeah, I enjoyed the main event, but I definitely just kind of felt like the show just had lost momentum, was a bit of a lull. I was like, yeah, it was actually doing all right. Here's where it died. This is the exact moment it died. But anyway, yeah, like a perfectly fine smackers. WWE are in their lull point at the moment. It happens every year. It's just kind of interesting that it just this exists. That this period after WrestleMania, before we actually get to Money in the Bank, it's always just kind of air, and you can feel like the effort also feels that way. Like they'll start building up characters or trying out ideas. The shows just aren't really that exciting normally in this period. They had the Backlash show last year in France, which really helped give a jolt to the WWE product, where it just didn't really have much momentum, really. It really helped last year that we had that hot period of like brand new big champion Cody. He was like physically there and doing all his stuff. This year, the John Cena stuff just hasn't been followed up on that well, and it was not a WrestleMania main event that was received that well either, and you were building into John Cena versus Randy Orton in 2025. It's like, okay, can have some fun, we can get this out of the way. But that doesn't mean like I'm super invested in what's really going on. There's a lot of character building and just kind of reshufflings and things, and it's not the most exciting period at the moment. And that's reflected in the viewership as well, where SmackDown got its lowest viewership ever, if I'm right. Monday Night Raw, I can't remember which one, but yeah, Monday Night Raw was apparently, I can't remember if it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, where the US number for Monday Night Raw was under a million. Like, that is bad. The thing I understand is they have traded, because I didn't realise that Netflix wasn't in, it's not in as many homes in America percentage-wise as I thought. Because I do know, over here in the UK, we're one of the countries that has really adopted streaming, and we've done it for quite a few years now. So over here in the UK, it being on Netflix is huge, because suddenly you're not on, it was on BT Sport over here, which is behind like a £25 or £30 paywall like per month, and that's just for like their football content. And this, it's far, far easier to get it here on Netflix, so it's going to be in front of more eyes over here in the UK. But yeah, I didn't realise that over in America this isn't actually a move that's going to massively help them. So I can understand like worldwide numbers, I'm assuming WWE are doing fine. However, America numbers, where I would think a lot of the advertisers give the most shit about, that's where it's a bit of an issue that Monday Night Raw gets seen by below a million people. But it kind of fits that as well. And with Monday Night Raw as well, this was obviously the second show for Raw in the same arena, but that, like, just to actually see in the upper section that there were some empty seats, it's like, I don't know if there's a little swing starting to happen, because the product doesn't feel hot when I'm watching these shows. Like, Money in the Bank might be a selling point, they're still, the creative is still fine, there just isn't much excitement around what's happening. There's not much heat really within there. There's the odd stars, and maybe when with Cody coming back and Roman Reigns, like, their two current biggest stars of this generation aren't there. If you count CM Punk as number three within there, he's the only lad he's there, but he's not going to be wrestling really on TV, so he just like does a big run in and gets a big pop. So it's an interesting place to be in. We're in the normal lull, but the whole John Cena heel turn has just not been followed up on well at all. So they had the long-term excitement for the Cody reign and seeing that evolve. Yeah, and also last year we got to see like Rhea Ripley breaking out into becoming this huge babyface, and I guess Damian Priest in a way, that it dragged on. It dragged on quite a lot. There were different things at play, but this year I'm not particularly super excited for a lot of stuff. Really, it's Bron Breakker and Seth Rollins in that group with Paul Heyman. At the moment, I like the idea of building up Seth and having him go for a title maybe at SummerSlam. I like the idea of this really being used to elevate Bron Breakker. The group doesn't feel fully formed yet. I'm missing a piece, so I can't assess it properly yet. And it feels like the one bright spark, really. That feud is getting huge reactions over the Monday Night Raw. But yeah, if a business is currently down, and they are running so many shows, like it's a special on the weekends almost like every couple of weeks. So like next week, I'm not reviewing SmackDown. I'm reviewing Saturday Night's Main Event and Monday Night Raw. It's almost like I'm only going to review the odd SmackDown just because I've got so many of these weekend shows to be getting through. We've got like Money in the Bank, we've got Night of Champions. Like, obviously, I'm not covering the NXT shows. Oh, that was the other thing as well for this weekend. I can't remember. I think it was meant to be SmackDown, Saturday Night's Main Event, Raw, NXT, with NXT Battleground as well at the weekend. And they've had to cancel that final NXT show because they only sold 1,000 tickets. It, like, in that period of white hot WWE selling out everything, it feels like like that moment's gone. You might see the ramifications for this point of perception a few months down the line, because perception takes a while to like kick in, but it also takes a really long time to shake off as well. Just look at AEW. AEW have shaken that off now, and they're in hitting a really good stride, but we'll see what happens with WWE, where it doesn't feel like that hot product that it was this time last year, which is fine. You're in a huge crowning period this time last year. However, now the wheels have kind of, I wouldn't say fallen off, but things have stalled a bit. Anyway, let's jump on over to the Money in the Bank qualifiers for the other notes. Solo Sikoa beat Rey Fénix and Jimmy Uso, and Alexa Bliss beat Chelsea Green and Mia Yim. Both triple threats were given the time to actually flow. Crowds built into a this is awesome for both, but that is a WWE this is awesome, which really translates to we are invested and enjoying ourselves. Bliss was being interviewed backstage by Byron into a very awkward staging for talking to Charlotte outside of Aldis's office, for Julia to walk out and Nick to introduce the new Smackers signing. Awkward, because for Aldis to walk out after Julia, Julia had to walk out of frame and then just stand waiting on her mark for Nick to come out, and then all four standing on their mark spots for all of them. Like, oh, this is just so awkward and stage play. The WWE have shaken off a lot of stuff, but often AEW has some stuff with staging, but this is just like WWE haven't shaken that off yet. They still have that stuff to sneak into their production. Faxium continued to get their showings in a solid wee back and forth against DIY. Yes, it was fast. Yes, it was flippy. Yes, it was super kicky. R-Truth got a recorded sit-down interview with Barrett. As the lifelong Cena fan, he doesn't want to have to fight his friend John, but if he has to smack the man back into his senses, then he will. You know what? One of the better mixings of Truth's silly nonsense, along with the reminder that he is actually a wrestler. A title match with Cena set for Saturday night's main event. Aleister Black faced Carmelo Hayes. The pairing with The Miz still feels so corny for Melo. Melo, to be fair, the much more exciting competitor to see facing Black than Miz. He can do a springboard to get caught by a kick, and he did! Yay! Stolen of a Black Mass kick to Melo by a Miz DQ interference, getting Miz taking the move instead again, and ending the segment with the top rope leg drop and nothing but net instead. Yeah, Aleister Black and Melo is already raining high at the end of the segment. I mean, the point is he's building to getting kicked. but yeah, that's it. Take that beating. Walking slow and hurt, Drew McIntyre all grumpy about Priest hitting that South of Heaven through the tables in the crowd back at Backlash. A video aired earlier with Damian narration, calling it the McIntyre Vortex as the two amped things up a gear. Drew showed just how great he is by nailing the animosity in response. The two will be in a steel cage match at Saturday night's main event. And that brings us to the end of SmackDown. A genuinely fun main event that I had a great time with. And the rest of the show is on. Well, I'm looking at it and I'm just like, I think all of this belongs in the other notes. Like, everything. It's just stuff happening. So obviously, a lot of it building quite strongly to stuff. But I mean, the most obvious being Money in the Bank qualifiers. Like, that's fine. Whatever. I enjoy those, but it still belongs in the other notes because I don't have a lot to say about it. Like, it's still fine. It's still fun. So yeah. But it's still my much preferred show this week, because we get over to Monday Night Raw, and man, I'm just, this show, I felt so sorry for anybody who watched this live on TV. It's oof. I did say earlier, because we are in Greenville, I realised it's not in the same place, because it's Greensboro, North Carolina, and Greenville, North Carolina. God, Matt, know your American G cities within South Carolina. God. But yes, I did say earlier it's 1 hour 40 minutes, that's my edited version. A time code which immediately screamed to me, fuck all happens, does it? But one thing which is kind of important is, I'll get to it in a later segment, but there is an injury which was treated quite seriously, and I'm assuming in terms of my edited version time that makes sense why it's probably like 10 minutes shorter than it would normally be off this edited version. You probably cut that stuff out, so that's maybe why my version was like the shortest I've seen so far. So it's less of a F all happened and more there was an injury, we faffed about for a bit but we sorted it out, and we just cut that out of the edited version. Like, that's fine. That's absolutely alright. But yeah, you see in the upper section, like, actual red seats where nobody was sat actually visible, like, oh, we're not in that sellout hot business period anymore, are we? I missed a couple of Raws through COVID, but since I've come back, this marks two Raws in a row where the crowd has just been cold outside of the Punk and Volin stuff. And this is, yes, this is a three-hour show, and they're cold outside of the two things, actually. Ray Ripley and the CM Punk Seth Rollins things. Everything else just kind of gets fine reactions. Like, not awful, they're like dancing with Jay. But they don't feel massively heated for a lot of stuff. And you'll see what I mean as I go through it. So anyway, jumping over to Monday Night Raw, and at first let's talk about Jay Uso versus Bron Breakker in the main event.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
And he's not alone!
Basically an episode bubbling the Seth Rollins group against Punk, Sammy and Jay. Last year this was our Intercontinental Championship main event. This time one's world champion and the other has Paul Heyman in his corner. If there's one opponent that works with Jey Uso's style, it's honestly the explosive nature of Breakker. Often watching a Jey match, you're just waiting for things to just kick up into that gear, like at the WrestleMania match where you're kind of just waiting for it and then they start hitting those bigger moves, but I don't really feel like they've kicked up into that gear I was wanting for. But that's exactly what Bron brings. What doesn't work in the matches with Gunter works much better against the Steiner. Doesn't matter anyway, because Seth jumps Jay for the DQ and ignited the show ending brawl. The crowd was suddenly the loudest I've heard in ages as a damn loud pop for Punk's music, and they sang his song in volume before the punches started happening and they're all cheering and crazy for the brawl. Where did this noise come from? It gave a huge reaction to Rhea Ripley. The rest of the show was just, yeah, it's fine. It's just reactions. Wrestling's happening. It's kind of, It's fine. But we come to here. It's like the biggest pop I've heard. We crowd in ages, like, where did this come from? They loved CM Punk. They bloody love their CM Punk. They absolutely adored that man. But yeah, I did like the idea of giving us Jey Uso versus Bron Breakker, and just in my mind, I'm just immediately mirroring where they were this time last year. Generally, both have been elevated. Obviously, Bron Breakker is in the middle of his big elevation thing. But yeah, both already feel so much bigger than they were this time last year. And Jey Uso was already incredibly popular in that IC champion chasing role, and he pretty much feels the same now he's world champion, but he's just fighting people higher up the card. I say as I'm talking about him facing the same lad. Well, Breakker's been elevated too. Breakker comes out with Paul Heyman, which immediately just feels different. But yes, so far all of the feelings with that Seth Rollins group with Bron Breakker, they are all clicking. And for me, what really showed is just how hot this brawl was. They were so hot for CM Punk coming out and beating these people up. It's not just Punk's popularity, they're doing a good job bouncing him off of Rollins. Quite generally, the tag match that Rollins and Breakker are having against Sami and Punk, that tag match seems to be the most heated thing they currently have. Like, genuinely very impressed with how they built it up in such a short period of time for the crowd to be behind it so much. I don't really know how full of a comment I can give on this Seth Rollins thing, because it feels like it's currently an incomplete lineup. So at the moment, it's just like, it's got Bron Breakker, it's got Seth Rollins. I'm waiting for the rest of it to unfold. So I'm not going to be like, oh, this group is amazing, or this group is crap. It's like, no, those are good so far. Clearly not finished. So we're going to wait until I actually see what they're kind of building to before being too critical. I'm not that critical at the moment. I'm kind of just full of praise. And then I'll jump on to the Money in the Bank qualifiers over Monday Night Raw. Rhea Ripley versus Kairi Sane versus Zoe Stark, a.k.a. Rhea Ripley versus two other people who are also there. Unfortunately, the headline grabber was Stark injuring her knee. She's already had surgery on. Sane wasn't quite in position for the springboard dropkick. They were trying to do the slow turnaround into a big sudden hit. Stark flew anyway, and on landing her leg, she just twisted and buckled at the knee and was immediately just shouting in pain as everyone just immediate concern on their face, especially because it's already a knee she's had surgery on. Immediately cut to shots of the crowd and the Money in the Bank briefcases overhead before cutting to break. I'm assuming Zoe was meant to be the one to take the pin in the match, as she was the no entrance competitor. Only one in this match to get zero entrance. Like, oh, okay, so I can see what's happening here. But obviously things were changed. All three were nailing their flows until the injury. Also a shout out to the dropkick Rhea hit on a top rope flying Kairi. Just bounced the woman mid-air. Kind of just like, it's the fact that you can just see the connection where Rhea's leg hits Kairi's stomach and she just kind of just bounces. It's just like Kairi takes some of the most unique bumps. That just looked amazing. But the crowd were behind the pin in the end, which is like, it's kind of just a shame that what happened, and obviously it's one of those sucky injuries that you hope isn't as serious as it seems to appear to be. Immediate thought was, oh, that's like bad injury, so hopefully it's not as bad as it looked. Moving swiftly on to Becky Lynch versus Natalia versus Roxanne Perez. With Julia on Smackers, Perez was shown signing for Raw. Lynch was the only one who got an entrance though, and already the South Carolina crowd sounded pretty tempered, the audio being turned up to being clearly able to hear individual voices hollering, which is a shame because Becky and Roxanne were great together. The match itself, a solid WWE telematch flow, but as the two traded blows up on the corner, you could hear "we want tables." It's like, oh, they are not invested. A decent 10 minutes to let this play out too. In the end, Becky potentially had the pin on Natalia, but goody hero Lyra Valkyrie returned to lay lamps on the lass, like the goody heroes do. The commentary's trying to sell that, oh, she's just so angered by what happened and the crowd's cheering her anyway, so as you're watching the show, it feels like they're presenting this as a good thing, even though she's interfering in a match, taking out a competitor. It's WWE logic where if everyone's cheering and happy with it, then it is okay. But really, my main takeaway is the crowd reacted well and loud for Lyra Valkyrie, where pre-WrestleMania, she's just getting very nothing reactions, which sucks because she would then draw the crowds into her matches and she would get reactions during the matches that they wouldn't stay quiet. Just when she came out, they'd do the woo, but then they're just so quiet for the start of the match. Here, you heard a loud cheer, just a huge cheer as she's actually jumping out. So it's like this has actually worked. And with that, onto the other notes. Yeah, no men's Money in the Bank qualifiers for this show. The transphobe opened up the show promising to defeat Jay on Saturday. Good to have a segment to immediately be able to skip until Gunter strode on out. I was like, okay, maybe I'm not going to like skip all the way through the segment. He strode on out as the man who is set to face the winner of Saturday night's main event. The educated European, was he out to make easy work of the idiot American? Yeah, pretty much. Using the match with Pat as a framing for, look what I do when I'm personally disrespected by non-wrestlers. I did actually enjoy that. It's like, in my mind going, oh, was it now actually worth Gunter and Pat doing that match? Because now Gunter can refer to that match every time he's taking a dig at someone. And you know what? I really don't mind that long term. Then Jey Uso super kicked a misinformation spreader in the face. The show went off with the inverse because you got to set up the always Jey game to lose though. It takes some real skill and effort to have me not really invested in a tag team match where three of the four competitors are Penta, AJ Styles, and Finn Balor. Yet they managed it. Yet they managed it. Really about the Judgment Day numbers and dysfunction, with El Grande attacking Penta once again. Later in the show, we got more Judgment Day as Roxanne Perez bought gifts as Finn's audition for the new member. Raquel read it as the man trying to replace Liv. Dom read it as, oh, a tray of tasty chicken has just suddenly appeared. So, lightly just go along with it. Sheamus faced Grayson Waller and we all move on with our lives. As this match was happening, and it's going on for 10 minutes, I'm like, I cannot imagine watching this tepid show live. It was quite nice to just hear a crowd actually chant Sheamus' name during a match. That was lovely. But match itself, like, the atmosphere was pretty quiet. Like they were happy to see Sheamus, but come on. Come on. What are we doing here? Yep, I said that it's kind of just a tepid show. They were hot for Rhea Ripley, and they were hot for the main event. Like, an incredibly hot. So loud for CM Punk. It's like maybe because they hadn't really used up a lot of energy because they were just tepid and quiet during the majority of it. You get to that main event and they just pop like mad. A boring show. And then suddenly, oh my God, he's here. Oh my God. And they exploded for it. So this show didn't really do anything to help shake off that kind of feeling, that lull feeling of like a lack of excitement in WWE right now. Where I wouldn't say there's a super negative feeling of this is bad or anything. It's more of a, yeah, it's all right. Like tepid. Tepid is still the word I'd go with. It's just how it feels right now. It's not heated. They've put water in the pan and it's just not bubbling. It's just not heating up. It's just kind of there. So I could probably still dip my hand in and be all right. It's just not warm at all. Yeah, you know, it leads to these reviews being quicker because I've got F all to say. But yeah, hopefully things kick up a bit once we get to Money in the Bank and we get our direction towards SummerSlam. And maybe we get the different members introduced. And of course, you know, Cobb just feeling a bit more natural in there. This was a weird introduction type of thing. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. Do all the things I said at the start of the show. Listen to everybody else here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. We are in an amazing place right now. Also, join the Discord so you can have a lovely chat with lovely people. Also, read the newsletter. The amount of work that goes into that is... You see it when you read it. And I will be back this time next week to talk about Saturday Night's main event and Monday Night Raw. To be fair, Saturday Night's main event feels pretty strong. You've got a steel cage match. You've got that hard tag match. You've got John Cena wrestling. Guessing probably what's going to be a super rapid, fast R-Truth match with maybe a table thing afterwards just to settle the point. But I'm not expecting that to be much to write home about. So it feels like a match with... It feels like a card with actually quite a bit on it. It's quite a bit going for it. Even if these shows around it... Bloody hell. I've been back 2 weeks after COVID and this is what you're giving me? This is what I have? Come on. Are you not entertained? No. I'm not. This is... What is this? What are these TV shows? Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to watch the WWE show so you don't have to. And with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.